You hear what I'm saying? Once we start something rolling, we can be forgiven, but not always does that ball stop rolling. And the issue is, how do we feel toward God when He doesn't stop rolling as fast as we like? David shows you. That prayer right there, God forgave him, restored him, and he ended up losing four sons over it. Four of his sons' lives were lost because of the sin. How much is one good-looking girl worth in an act of adultery? Well, I'll tell you, it's not worth four of your children. Rick, and God loved you and me enough to write this down because all us men think we could handle it. And God knows that it'll destroy us. God knows that those kind of relationships destroy us. And He loves us enough to write it down to warn us. See, we all think, it got the best of Solomon, it got the best of David, but I can handle five or six women at one time. You know, a little adultery, a little fornication. It's not going to get the best of me. I'll still think spiritual thoughts. See, and God knows it's a lie. He knows it's deception. Now listen to the last two verses I want to read you. God's going to, listen, there's David pouring out his soul to God. Watch the finale. Deliver me from blood guiltiness, O God. Guiltiness, O God. Thou God of my salvation. And my tongue shall sing aloud of thy righteousness. Lord, open thou my lips, and my mouth shall show forth thy praise. He's calling on God to take the initiative. You deliver me from the blood guiltness of it, and I'll respond. And beloved, that's the next point I want to make sure you understand. God made us responding creatures. David called on God to take the initiative, to get him going right again. But David said, understood there was a responsibility on his part too. How many of you know that it's a lot easier to sing aloud of God's righteousness than it is to deliver someone from blood guiltiness? Again, God takes the hard part and gives us the easy part, but we have a part. All right, come back to Samuel. Verse 16, but all is... Saul has set David up. There you are. It could happen to you at the office. It could happen to you in family relationships. But Satan has set a snare for you where you've been made to look bad, and now you can really blow the whole thing. Verse 16, but all Israel and Judah loved David because he went out and came in before him. Now, Saul put him... You see, as commander of the whole army, quite often Saul, David may not have been at the front of the battle, but rather directing the battle. But as captain of 1,000, he will always be in the thick of the battle. And Saul is doing this hoping someone will do him the favor and kill him. I.e., well, I tried with that javelin and missed, and Goliath missed, Mark, Goliath missed, but and instead David just keeps leading the Israeli army to victory. And so what we see happening is that Saul's scheme is backfiring. All it does, instead of David getting killed, you know, doing the decent thing and getting killed out there, it's affording the opportunity for all of Israel to see and better observe David. Now, I want you to hear that. In your life and in my life, God allows things to happen, allows people to wickedly treat us so that other people can observe what Christianity is all about, knowing our disappointment. David has been publicly humiliated. Look, y'all, this man has slain Goliath. There is not one person in all Israel that does not know who he is. Do you understand that that's even more notoriety than being captain of the Clinton, Mississippi high school football team? You hear what I'm saying? that when you ride on that high a profile, everyone's watching. Now, y'all, God is good to us. Ed, God knows that you and I, and nearly all of us in here, simply can't handle that high a profile. He knows that if we get up there, when we get disappointments like this, that we are not going to do as well as David. Now, God doesn't want us to fail. God doesn't want us to look bad. We're His sons. A father wants his son to look good, wants his son to come through. Never would put his son in a situation that he knew he would fail. Not a loving father. When God allows these things to happen, He doesn't allow it hoping that we'll fail. He may know, He knows that we will or that we won't. He knows the outcome. He's Alpha and Omega. He's the beginning and the end. When we get to the end of the story, you know, look. Here's tomorrow. There it begins and there it ends. When I get to the ending and fail, God's waiting on me. He was here when I got started, but He's already at the end also, waiting to pick up the pieces. When I get there and fail, it didn't surprise Him. He didn't say, "Oh, I didn't know how you were going to do." You see? So the test wasn't the hope with the idea that I would fail. It would be, but more the idea is, I didn't give you this test that you couldn't have passed it, but you thought you would, and I knew you wouldn't. You had all at your disposal to succeed. I had molded enough of my word in you, enough character in you. I had done enough, and I put the Spirit in you. But when it came to the moment, to the critical moment, you blew it. I saw it was there, and now you see it. Now let's talk about it. See, that's what God... Now let's talk about it. You say, well, when did we do that? Well, that's when you thought about it later and repented and said, God, I sinned. See, we're talking about it now. All right? So that we then can call on Him as the great physician to come do some surgery. That's better than you trying to do it, Jim. You know... Taking a scalpel and, all right, I'm gonna do some spiritual surgery. I got a little too much jealousy and a little too much envy. You know, that's kind of like a New Year. What I'm saying is New Year's resolution, okay? Self-surgery. Doesn't work. What we need is the great physician to remove it. And he isn't going to remove it. See, he's a gentleman. Have you ever seen a doctor just walk up to someone on the street, throw them down the street and operate? Come on, gang. Is that too fast? See, surgeons... Brother Lewis, used to be chief of surgery down at St. Joe here. Surgeons are gentlemen about that sort of thing. See, you got to ask them. You got to go to them. And you got to give them permission. It's the law. They can't just come to your house and, you know, 15 doctors and hold you down and cut. Now, Jesus is that way also. He's a gentleman physician. He loves you enough to make the proper diagnosis, and He's never wrong. And He'll make the proper diagnosis. Now the ball's in our court. So what are we going to do? I'll tell you what most of us do most of the time. I want a second opinion. Because, listen to me, because God's way never looks like it's going to work. The natural mind will never see it work. 17 years ago, I left the oil business, making over $50,000 a year. BMW company car, all the good stuff. And God called me to teach the Bible. And I decided to throw water on the fire like Elijah, on the altar like Elijah did. I was going to do nothing to help him out. No advertising, no love offerings, no financial appeals. You've never heard me give one. That if God was God and He had called me, He could do it. And me, I could just sit back and just relax in it. Sounds easy. You should have been there. So how am I going to pay my house note? The company only owed me a couple of days' wages, $700-something. That's all I had. Didn't miss a meal. Saw God multiply food once. Now, what God did with that, observe, he didn't do that because I was spiritual. Now, to the contrary, him delivering me through that grew me, and molded me. You guys have the same kind of things happen to you. God wants you to succeed. I'm going to tell y'all something. I have not had, after the fourth or fifth month in the ministry, 17 years ago, I've not had a single day that I had a financial crisis since. I've come right up to the wall, but there was no crisis. Why? I knew he was going to come through. It's no crisis if you're not nervous. See, because I learned God's M.O. He's going to deliver me. And a lot of times it's going to please him to wait till the last minute. So I may as well. Now the next thing is, I may as well relax because he is going to be there at the last minute. All right? And so we've got to get a grip on thinking. When this Saul comes in your life and demotes you, will you believe that all God is doing is letting everybody have the opportunity to better observe you so that you can be used by God to win their favor? I'm trying to encourage you to take it. I'm trying to encourage you to get a totally different view. Instead of, I got to get away from that Saul. I need a job transfer. See, we must come to realize that these people that God brings into our lives are God's instruments. Not the devil's. Oh, the devil was using Saul, but God was winning. What was the result? David got great favor with the people. Now, the question is, hear me, beloved, do you have and do I have great favor with the people when these things happen to us? It depends. Do we whine, murmur, grumble, and complain, especially against the Lord? Or do we, like David, listen again. That you might be justified when you speak and clear when you judge. You see, beloved, is what I'm getting at. When we whine against the Lord, against our circumstances like this, we're telling people God isn't dealing right with us, that God's unfair. Now, how do you get that guy now to accept the Lord? You just told him he was a disappointment to you, wasn't handling you right. But to the contrary, when we bear it, this is a testimony. That man's God is sufficient to him even when everything goes wrong. Now, that's a God I'm interested in. Listen to me. If you've got a God that's only sufficient when things are going great, I am not interested. Don't even tell me about him. I want a God that's sufficient when everything is great and when everything isn't great. I want a God that's sufficient when Dr. Lewis tells me my grandchild is dying. I want one that tells me, but I've got to saw your leg off, Floyd. That God is sufficient when I hear the worst news I could hear. And if there's no God like that around, eat, drink, and chase Mary. And Mary doesn't run anymore. But you see, you don't have to worry about that. And so, beloveds, what we're trying to see tonight is that though David was anointed king, David is called upon God to endure hatred. You have been anointed by God to rule just as surely as David. And beloved, you've been called on him to endure hatred. This isn't just a story about David. It's a basic principle. If you walk with God to please God as David did, you will endure hatred. And if you're the most popular guy around all the lost people that you know, you are not. You have decided you will not endure hatred, and you're going to be one of the good old boys, and you're compromising. The more you let God have your life, You will have people both love you and hate you, even lost people. Some lost people will greatly admire you. You will get favor with some of them. And they are the ones, hopefully, that either you will lead to the Lord, or you may not be the one, but just that thought's in their mind, and they move away, and someone else reels them in. Because one plants, and one waters, and one's the sunshine, and someone else may bring in the harvest. Don't worry about who gets the harvest. What we don't want, what I couldn't take, is that someone would say, "Well, Ed, I would accept the Lord Jesus, except I know Floyd Jones. And because I've seen how he reacts to everything that goes bad, I don't want anything to do with that religion, because it just isn't sufficient." You hear what I'm saying? So, yes, I'm offering David as quite an illustration tonight. I've got to do that, because later we're going to wonder, is this the same guy? Okay, and that's when you're going to understand what Christianity is all about, Tom. And the answer is going to be, yes, this dog is going to, you know, that we're going to read about in a few chapters, this slob of an example of Christianity is the same man that Floyd praised, you know, two or three nights earlier. But that's the way it really is. Verse 17, and Saul said to David, "Behold," watch this one, "behold, my elder daughter, Merab, her will I give thee in marriage. Only be thou valiant for me, and fight the Lord's battles." What a hypocrite. Look, how you say that, Floyd? I cheated before I got here and read the next part of the verse. "For Saul said, let not my hand be upon him, but let the hand of the Philistines be upon him." You see that? He says, "Oh, David, fight valiantly the wars of the Lord," i.e., I'm going to send you out to war, and I'm hoping the Philistines kill you, but fight valiantly on behalf of the Lord. This guy, do you understand that this is a contract? How many of you understand? This is a contract just as surely as David put one out on Uriah. Okay? Wait just a minute. I've got a problem with that. Back in chapter 17, we already heard that Saul promised that anyone that killed Goliath would get his daughter in marriage. What's this? "I will give you if you fight valiantly for me and lead the armies." Saul has already reneged. See, the point I'm getting at is, Saul, by the time we get here, I want you to understand, David has already been snubbed. Saul, see, we should have had a wedding within a week at the most of the slaying of Goliath. But when you read back up in before, like up at verse 5 and 6, there's already been several more battles. And the same thing is true when you jump down to verse 16. "They loved him because he went out and went in." That means he led the army out and brought the army in safely. Quite a leader. Where's his wife? Why am I saying that? Because we're trying to appreciate real Christianity. David is dealing with a man who has promised him his daughter in marriage in front of a whole nation and has reneged. How would you feel? Come on. How would you feel about that? You'd start thinking, well, what's everybody thinking about me? What is it that Saul has found in me that he has reneged? There must be something there. Let's observe David and see what it is that's so bad that Saul won't do it. In other words, it's public humiliation. And so we're observing how David behaves. I can't believe what I'm reading. David's a better man than I am. But then he was picked to be king on this earth over quite a few million people, and I haven't been. I have a very small flock. Well, by golly, that right there tells you that there's something about the wisdom of God involved in all this, doesn't it? Let's look. Oh, I can't help but say this. Did anyone notice what he said? "Let the hand of the Philistines be on David." Has anyone read the story of David yet? This guy wants the Philistines to kill David. Has anyone read chapter 31 yet? Well, let me just tell you before we get there. The Philistines trapped Saul and the armies of Israel on Mount Gilboa and slew Saul. The machinations of his heart, as wicked as they were toward David, fell down upon him. Let this be a severe warning for everyone in here, including me. Verse 18, and David said unto Saul, who am I? And what is my life or my father's family in Israel that I should be son-in-law to the king? I can't believe that verse. What humility, honest humility in this man. The king's already reneged once, offers the girl again, and David says, I'm not worthy. I.e., no wonder he didn't give her to me the first time. Killing Goliath wasn't good enough. What he's saying is, hey, I'm a commoner from the wrong side of the tracks. I'm from Galena Park. And this is a fine girl from the palace. And more than that, it would make me son-in-law to the king. And I'm just not worthy. Now, beloveds, I want to point out that if David so highly viewed the honor of being son-in-law to the king, then with what measure do we view? With what measure should we esteem that we're the sons of the King of Kings? Listen to me, listen to me. Wicked people in glass cathedrals are always talking about having a high self-image. Psychology books are full of the junk of the problem with mankind is he's got a low self-esteem and needs a high positive image. You're not going to get it the way they teach it. You want a high positive image? Let me tell you. You've been born again? You accepted Jesus? You are son of the King of the universe. The King of Kings. You're his son. Whew. What do you need? If that doesn't pump you up, if that isn't a positive self-image, what is? Because I, frankly, looking at you, can't believe he would have you. But you look back at me and say, have you looked in the mirror today? You hear what I'm saying to you? Look, if God, who knows, Vicki, everything about you, every thought, will have you as his child to rule with him, either God's very foolish or he loves her incredibly and has the power and the wisdom to make something out of her that we can't see. And I suggest that both are so. He has the power and the wisdom. I should throw a third one in, shouldn't I, Vicki? And the patience to do it. Verse 19, but it came to pass at the time when Merab, Saul's daughter, should have been given to David, she was given to Adriel the Maholathite in marriage. Can you believe it? Double humiliation. Fellas, come on, there's a lot of young men in here. What's your attitude going to be toward a guy who's got two, you know, who's twice humiliated you in front of a whole nation concerning marriage to his daughter? David is amazing when he's right on. And he's also amazing when he goes the other way. See, David's like a lot of us. He's going to have a hard time finding that smooth, level plane of growth with God. What we're going to see during these first years in his life especially are, whee, Goliath, whoo, yee, you know, like Old Faithful. But see, God said he wanted us to be rivers of living water, not geysers, okay? And right now, we're seeing David on a high. Verse 20, and Michal, Saul's daughter, loved David. And they told Saul, and the thing pleased him. And Saul said, I will give him her, that she may be a snare to him. What a fine father-in-law this guy's going to make. Somebody, hey, any of you in here been whining to God about your father-in-law? You're way ahead of the game. Look at this, look at this. No one in here, I'm glad all of you in here that have, there, I saw that, Carter, that have bad, look. David survived this father-in-law. You're going to make it. Trust God. All right? Wherefore, he says, she may be a snare to him, and that the hand of the Philistines may be against him. Boy, he's still got that same record going, hasn't he? You know. Wherefore, Saul said to David, thou shalt this day be my son-in-law in one of the two. In other words, if you didn't get the first one, at least you'll have the second daughter. Okay? Verse 22, and Saul commanded his servant, saying, speak with David secretly, and say, behold, the king has delight in thee, and all his servants love thee. Now remember last week we saw that David had a little problem. There was a trap for him when the women were singing his praises. They were flattering him. They were flattering him. And flattery is the most sincere form of hatred that I know. Anytime you're being flattered, watch out. If you don't deal with it, it's going to come back. And they began to flatter David. They began to flatter him and lay a snare. Because they're saying all these positive things that that we like to hear. Behold, the king has delight in thee. And all his servants love thee. Now, therefore, be the king's son-in-law. I.e., you are worthy. That's what they said. See, David said, I'm not worthy. I'm not worthy. They said, you're worthy. You're worthy. And the servants, Saul's servants, spoke these words in the ears of David. And David said, hey, hanging in there. I like this boy. Seemeth it to you a light thing to be a king's son-in-law, seeing that I am a poor man and lightly esteemed? I have no money. He says, I can't ask her. I can't marry her. I don't have any money. And I'm lightly esteemed. I'm not from one of the main tribes yet. Not yet, they weren't. He said, I'm not from a main family in that tribe. Not yet. And the servants of Saul told him, saying, on this manner spoke David. I.e., we told David to marry your daughter, to ask her to marry him, and he said no. But the reason he said no is, I ain't got any money. And besides, I'm a nobody. I love it. Someone says he's a nobody after he killed Goliath. Y'all. I remember years and years ago that I made a winning tackle to save a football game. Now you hear me. And for months and years, we talked about that around my hometown. And if nobody else did, I'd brought it up. Do you understand what I'm saying to you, David? And I can see again why God chose David to a large ministry. Verse 25, and Saul said, thus shall you say to David the king, to David, the king desireth not any dowry. You don't have to have, okay, I know you don't have any money. You don't have to have any money. Because I desire a different dowry for my daughter. But 100 foreskins of the Philistines to be avenged of the king's enemies. But let's see what Saul really had in mind. But Saul thought to make David fall by the hand of the Philistines. He thinks, surely this will get him killed. All right? Now, I want you to understand his reasoning. The Philistines, who live only a few miles away, would hear of this when David pulled it off, if he pulled it off successfully. And that would greatly incense the Philistines, who were the uncircumcised, because they totally identified circumcision with covenant with Jehovah God, the God of Israel, of which they wanted no part. To them, that was treating their bodies blasphemously, desecrating. But Saul wanted it as proof that those that David had slain really were Philistines. Verse 26. And when his servants told David these words, it pleased David well to be the king's son-in-law. And the appointed days were not yet expired. Wherefore David arose and went, he and his men, verse 27, and slew of the Philistines 200 men. David figures if 100's good, 200's better. And David brought their foreskins and gave them in full number to the king, that he might be the king's son-in-law. And Saul gave him Michal, his daughter, in marriage. Yes, I am amazed at what the Bible records also.